So it's safe to say there's never been a president like Donald Trump. He took office with no previous military or political experience. He won the presidency on a razor-thin margin of 80,000 votes in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan. President Trump has outraged many Americans on an ongoing basis. Special Counsel Robert Mueller is probing possible ties between Russia and Trump's campaign. And Trump's approval ratings are the lowest ever for a president's first year in office. But many conservatives applaud Trump, and he's retained support among the base of Republicans that helped elect him. So what lies ahead for the Trump presidency, and what does his first year in office tell us? That's the focus for a discussion this evening at the Slavin Center at Providence College. This event is co-sponsored by PC's Department of Political Science and the Office of Academic Affairs. I'm Rhode Island Public Radio political reporter Ian Donis, and I'd like to start by introducing our panel. From the far right, Devin Driscoll is a proud alum of Providence College, currently a law student at the University of Minnesota Law School, and he's certainly no stranger to Rhode Island. He led President Obama's Rhode Island campaign in 2008 and also managed Clay Pell's 2014 campaign for governor. Next to him is State Republican Chairman Brandon Bell, a founding partner of the law firm of Fontaine Bell, which handles general civil litigation, criminal litigation, and domestic relations, and certainly an active participant in Rhode Island's political thrust and parry. Next up here is Gabriella Domenzain, director of the Latino Policy Institute at Roger Williams University. She served as deputy campaign manager for Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley's Democratic presidential campaign in 2016 and has often commented in the media. On my left is Lisa Pelosi, presently the Vice President for Communications and Government Relations at Johnson & Wales University. We should note she is expressing her own views tonight. She was also Communications Director for former Rhode Island Governor Lincoln Almond and also worked for the U.S. House and U.S. Senate in Washington. And last but not least, Providence College political science professor Joseph Camerano. His areas of expertise include the presidency, Congress, public management, and campaigns and elections. So thank you all to members of the panel for being here tonight. I'd like to start with one signature of the Trump White House. That's the frequency of President Trump's bombastic statements, many of them on Twitter. It seems like President Trump's approval rating might go up by 10, who knows, maybe 15 points if he just laid off the Twitter for a little bit. But instead, he really can't seem to separate himself from continually making controversial statements. Brandon Bell, is President Trump his own worst enemy?
I don't think he should stop tweeting, if that's what you're asking. And I don't think he's his own worst enemy. Part of the appeal of President Trump is his authenticity. He's a straight shooter. That's what got him elected. And I think that the fact that he continues to tweet, am I a fan of many of his tweets? No. I would prefer that they be toned down. Is it presidential? Probably not. But we've seen that from generation to generation, the way chief executives have changed. And, for example, Ronald Reagan in 1980, after a horrible decade of the 70s, you came up with Ronald Reagan, and there was all kinds of criticism of the way he responded. And now, after 8 years of President Obama and the disaster that he was, we elected President Trump.
Gabriella Domenzain, it looks like you're itching to get in here. Certainly, many of President Trump's supporters like the way that he is the polar opposite of most politicians who speak in a plastic political language. But what do you make of his inability to stop getting embroiled in controversy?
I bristled on two counts. One of them is having Ronald Reagan and Donald Trump in the same even sentence. these two leaders present completely different visions of the Republican Party. And the second one is, our president is a bully, and he doesn't seem to understand that words have consequences. When he goes down an escalator and says Mexicans, like me, are murderers and rapists, a man in Boston gets kicked in a horrendous hate crime with people saying, get out of my country. Words have consequences. Leadership has consequences. And, in fact, today, there was a quote from The Hill about Tillerson and about how he has his staff print out Donald Trump's tweets to figure out how to create policy off of that. How do you create policy off of bombastic, insulting, pejorative, and racist language? Fortunately, though, one thing that has been good is that his tweets have been used in court to stop some of his most egregious offenses, right? Because they prove malicious intent, they prove racism, et cetera. So they're his own worst enemy, and in some way, the resistance's big defense.
Lisa Pelosi, you're a Republican, but it's my sense that you're not a huge fan of President Trump. So let's get your perspective on his mode of communication and how it works or does not work for the president and his agenda.
Well, to start, you know, first, I agree with you. What every politician has to learn is the power of their words. What we have with Donald Trump is he became president without going through what many previous presidents have gone through. They're governors, they're U.S. senators, they've been in the military. They've had to go through their career to learn how to measure and moderate what they say, because of what they say does have the power. It has the power to move markets. It could have the power to start a nuclear war. So that's something that Donald Trump has had to learn. But on the other hand, Donald Trump has used Twitter because it's unfiltered. He can get his message out and not rely on the traditional mainstream media to take what his words are and then to refashion them. So this has been Donald Trump from the beginning, that unfiltered, here I am, here are my thoughts, I am going to start every single morning and let you know exactly what I'm thinking. And that's what he's been doing.
Providence College professor Joe Camerano, you're a student of politics and the presidency. What is your analysis of how President Trump's communication style is a liability and or an advantage for him?
Well, on the one hand, he's not all that different in some ways, because if we look at the presidency in the modern period, the direct communication with the American public began with FDR, and every president since FDR has found a different way to innovate, to adapt to the technology that already exists, to create another unmediated link. I think that's so, in some ways, he's just exploiting technology the way it is now, just like other presidents have done. The difference, I think, is this impulsivity problem. That I do think that Donald Trump, through his career, figured be bombastic, you know, make a big splash, don't worry about the consequences. There's no such thing as bad attention. And I think that worked, and that's how he's behaving, but that's not how presidents have to behave. And I think that's what the problem is.
Devin Driscoll, President Trump, his bombast aside, he is pleasing some conservatives. The Republicans passed a major tax initiative, and we can debate whether that was good or bad. He's appointed a number of conservative judges. He's undoing a number of Obama-era regulations. Is this a foundation for building support among Republicans and conservative-leaning independents?
Well, I certainly think, Ian, that it is a way of earning the support and fealty of congressional Republicans at a minimum. In particular, if you look at his work on judges, the initial sort of original sin of his presidency is the Supreme Court and Justice Gorsuch, and the rate at which particularly courts of appeal but also district court judgeships are being filled with folks that the Federalist Society is happily mailing in. I think that is making a lot of congressional Republicans very happy. The rollback of a lot of regulatory reforms that were enacted under the Obama administration, particularly in areas that I care about in energy and the environment, are making a lot of folks in coal country very happy, even if isn't bringing back the jobs that don't really exist anymore. As to whether that works for conservative-leaning independents, that's the question that we're seeing played out in some special elections over the end of 2017, and I think really where the contest is going to be over the next year in 2018. people get themselves in trouble by thinking of permanent majorities in elections. Elections are snapshots. And the snapshot in 2016 is not one that a lot of Democratic and Democratic-leaning independents like. I'm not certain that the snapshot in 2018 is going to be what the president and congressional Republicans want to see either.
Gabriela Domenzan, we heard a little bit earlier about your offense at President Trump, but what about his conservative accomplishments? Is he putting together a foundation for building support for his political program?
You know, I think I have a lot of, it sounds funny to say, but I have a lot of Republican friends, and I think most of them were really, really offended by President Trump and his campaign. I think, is he building support for his conservative base, or is it being accepted by his conservative base? Yes. We know that he tweets and he says these things because he says, oh, my base loves it. It's like red meat, right? Just like that video that he said, the video before he was elected where he said, if I ever run, I'm going to run as a Republican because they'll believe anything that I say, right? He has this weird, you know, disrespect towards his base that they seem to love. Maybe it's this natural way of speaking. Maybe it's, you know, he's voicing frustrations in a way that I personally find offensive, but that other people are feeling relieved that they're actually expressing it. What he's actually doing is what's also really, really dangerous.
Brandon Bell, it looks like you're simmering there. Let's get a response from your perspective as state Republican chairman about the kind of policy efforts that President Trump is putting forward and what significance they hold moving forward.
Well, I think putting Gabrielle and I next to each other might have been a mistake, but having said that, I completely disagree with her that conservatives are very upset with President Trump. Your taxes are lower. The regulations are decreasing. We have peace and prosperity. ISIS is in retreat. You are not unhappy. I didn't say here at home in your living room, Gabrielle. I'm talking about in general. There is peace and prosperity. But going on something that the professor said earlier is, you know, generation to generation, the presidencies have changed. And, you know, I just pulled this editorial from the Providence Journal, and it says something to this. It says, his whole career has shown that the ordinary rules of the political game do not apply to him. Episodes that would come near ruining any other man have only made him stronger. His supporters do not care for his lapses from taste or his violence of speech and action. They like him the better for such demonstrations that he is one of them. This editorial is not the latest Ed Acorn piece on Donald Trump. This is from October of 1910 about Theodore Roosevelt. So, you know, various presidents, and we can go through them, but we don't have time tonight, have, you know, it's the culture and where they are in society. And I appreciate what Joe said about the fact that they didn't have technology in 1910 or in 1980, for that matter. But policy-wise, he's overperforming when it comes to the economy. Overperforming. The economy is booming right now. It's booming. It's trickling down right here in Rhode Island, where you see benefits from this tax reform, which the Democrats have just done a horrible job in branding, against themselves, because it's 90% of the people will benefit from tax relief. Not only are the folks that are working, the middle class, but the businesses that they work for are benefiting and they're giving back to their workers. So I don't see how that's a bad thing. So policy-wise, I think he's doing a really good job. His means to the ends, he's a street fighter. He's a street fighter. He's a guy from Queens who's on a construction site, and he says what's on his mind. And is it presidential? Do I wish he took back? Yes.
Republican analyst Lisa Pelosi, let me ask you about the Republican tax proposal. The Democrats say it's mostly going to benefit the rich, and so far it has not been popular, but it might prove more popular moving forward as some people find a little more money in their paychecks. Is this good policy from your perspective?
Well, I think the more people are learning about tax reform, about the bill that got passed, more people are starting to like it. So there have been recent polls that show, of course, Republicans really like it, and the Democrats are not there yet with us. So we have to wait to see how it actually trickles down. But you're right, Brandon. Most of the people will see a tax cut. It'll come in a little while, but they will start seeing money in their pockets, and they'll start seeing the benefits of this tax reform going forward. So it was good policy. What's very important to remember is Donald Trump ran on a number of issues. And when you talk about his base, the reason why his base is behind him is because the issues that he ran on in 2016 are the issues that he's been working on in 2017 and 2018. He made promises, and he's moving forward to make those, keep those promises. So that's why that core base support of Donald Trump are still with him.
Providence College Professor Joe Camerano, how do you think the GOP tax plan will affect President Trump moving forward? Help or hurt?
We like to look at the longer-term picture. I'm not a trained economist, but I do know enough about macroeconomics to know that any effect of any kind of tax reform is marginal at best any time, and more dependent on forces that are way beyond government's control. Total government spending is a fraction of our GDP. So there's really not that much. There could be a lot of talk of it, and there's pocketbook voting. You know, if you put a few bucks in someone's pocket, they may think it's better. I do think that the tax reform at this point in time is probably a wash. It may improve the electoral prospects of the Republican Party this year if some of the tax benefits accrue the way everybody hopes they will on the Republican side. I don't think tax reform is going to have much impact on Trump, in part because of Donald Trump.
Brandon Bell, I'd like to follow up on something. You mentioned the blank hole controversy, for lack of a better description. Obviously, that got a lot of attention. Democrats are very offended. President Trump denies that he's a racist, but he has sounded a lot of what Democrats say are dog whistles, appealing to the baser nature of people who are hateful. What is your explanation for why President Trump has not more forcefully repudiated the hate groups who perceive him as showing some solidarity?
Look, I'll throw it right out there. He's made some real mistakes. And the S-hole, that was a mistake. It was a real mistake. Everything that happened in Charlottesville, I believe me, I said it at the time. I'm not saying it now, 6 months, 8 months later. I said it about, initially when he was campaigning about the Muslim ban. I was, I think it's un-American the way he proposed it. I think the way it ended up happening is quite different. I think the Roy Moore stuff was just I'm totally against it. I repudiated that. I don't think that Donald Trump is a racist. You can disagree with me. I know you disagree with me, but you could disagree with me, and that's okay. I don't dislike you for disagreeing with me if you do. I don't think he's a racist. I think he's a street fighter. He says stupid things sometimes. I thought about Jesse Jackson talking about Hymetown. I thought about Phil Noel locally, a Democrat, talking about the ghetto town. You know, I don't think of them as anti-Semitic and racist just because they said those words. So I think he made errors. He has not lived his life as a racist. His daughter converted to Judaism. His son-in-law is a practicing Jew. I don't see that. That's not the way racists comport themselves. David Duke would not be seen with a Jew. But Donald Trump has absolutely no problem. He has not comported himself as a racist. I understand that some of these things are very inflammatory and bombastic, and I would like him not to say them.
You're listening to a public forum being recorded before a live audience at the Slavin Center at Providence College. I'm Rhode Island Public Radio political reporter Ian Donis, joined by Providence College political science professor Joe Camerano, Republican analyst Lisa Pelosi, Gabriella Domenzain of the Latino Policy Institute at Roger Williams University, Rhode Island Republican Chairman Brandon Bell, and PC alum and Democratic political operative Devin Driscoll.